This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290.ca. Have a couple bonus unrestricted free agents of the week for you on this Saturday morning, as obviously we're running out of time before July 1st hits.
Hold on, when
does Drew's contract expire?
Yeah, actually, I think it was last week. We told him yet.
Yeah.
So yesterday I'm driving to the Gold Eyes, actually, to see my brother play a concert at the Forks. Patty Cakes had a nice performance, and then I on the
you
way
didn't
there
invite me to that.
You know, I gave you a call, you didn't answer.
Yeah, you're screening his calls.
I didn't know they played.
Yeah, well,
I've been to a lot of Patty
when
Cakes.
You don't
concerts.
Answer your phone. This is what happens.
Text.
I don't need text.
If Richie
anymore,
if though. Richie doesn't get through to me, he doesn't text me because he thinks that because I haven't answered his call, that's all I get.
Well, you've been personal training lately, so. I have a couple things quickly before we get to this stuff. Yeah. Apparently, you have a new diet where you eat citrus, berries, and then red meat in the morning. And apparently, on Wednesday, you couldn't find any red meat, so you found a substitution. Why don't you tell the listeners about it?
Okay, so I'm working out.
Yeah, you're looking buff.
With my boy McDowell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to eat healthy as well.
Yeah.
So he suggested that I eat 6 ounces of red meat, citrus fruit, and some nuts in the morning.
Some nuts, sorry.
The first day that I started going on this new diet, I couldn't find any, so the only thing that I had was a hot dog. So, I did the citrus fruit, and then I've been eating salmon.
But hold on, hang on.
A hot dog in a bun?
No. It was just...
You said a hot dog in the... Like, you woke up in the morning.
Yeah, I put it in... What I do every morning is I just throw everything into, like, a Safeway bag. So I throw in my oranges, my nuts. You know, maybe I'll put a yogurt in there.
So you carried a bag to work of a hot dog, nuts, and like a
citrus
orange?
Oranges. Yeah, I've been eating oranges, also grapefruits. But then I went to Bernstein's Deli, our good friend Aaron Bernstein, and he gave me some nice cuts of poached salmon. So, you know, you get your protein, you get your omega fatty acids. I'm trying to lose weight here, boys.
What's the beer consumption?
You should be encouraging me here.
I'm certainly encouraging you. I'm very happy to hear that you're doing this.
I'm working out with my boy McDowell. Yeah. We're getting lean here.
Yeah.
Well, good.
How many beers did you have yesterday?
I haven't... No beers yesterday. No, I actually didn't drink during the Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals. I had...
That's shocking.
What did I have? I had iced tea. I had a Subway sandwich and
iced
tea.
Amazing.
But no, I'm trying to eat healthier. And, you know, you instead of encouraging me, you guys are making fun of
me.
No,
we're not.
Okay.
We're promoting.
When I come in here next season in October,
I'm a lean, mean fighting machine,
and, you know, you guys are cracking nuts on these abs.
I'll tell you what. Remember this conversation in 2 weeks' time when we're in Philadelphia and as he's eating a cheesesteak while sleeping in bed somehow.
No, it's going to be kale and it's going to be lettuce.
Yeah. Kale and lettuce.
And wheatgrass shots.
Good to know. Anyways, let's get back to the unrestricted free agent of the week.
It leaks through. And Tom Stralman makes it 1-0. Rangers.
Anton Stralman of the New York Rangers coming off. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent on July 1st. He's coming off of a two-year, $3.4 million contract, an average annual value of $1.7 million, 27 years old. And Anton Stralman is a guy who made himself a lot of money with his performance in these playoffs.
He sure did, Drew. I was just going to say, you know, who would have thought we would be talking about Anton Stralman as part of this UFA of the week leading into the July 1st free agency? And I think it's a testament to the game's changed a bit, which we kind of talked about there with Kelly McCrimmon earlier on in the show. But also, you know, to his perseverance. And a guy who came up with Toronto and couldn't really establish himself, gave a little bit more established in Columbus, and then goes over to the Rangers and really forms a nice pairing. Now, Mark Stahl, I think, is come around. Mark Stahl, after the eye injury, I didn't think was the same player. I think now he's back to that level, and I think that certainly allowed Anton Stralman a little bit more freedom moving the puck. But he does a lot of the simple plays quite well. And you even saw it in the Stanley Cup Finals. Take the puck out of your own zone, make that quick pass. And that's a valued commodity, and he's also a valued commodity in this. He's a right-handed shot. So I feel like a team like Detroit, who's always here wants the right-handed shot because all their defensemen are left-handed shots, they may be in on Dan Boyle, Matt Niskanen. But a guy like Anton Stralman, you have to see where he lines up in terms of what he costs, because he might be a guy who, for a team like Detroit, who fits in quite well in terms of their puck movement. And even New York. I mean, New York's got to sign a lot of guys here, guys, but they also have a lot of cap room. And when you look at their top four, they want to solidify they want to solidify it, obviously, and probably maintain what they have. The problem is, you know, Kevin Klein's under contract for the next 4 years at 2.9. I don't think he's the guy they want in that top four. So I think even though he's that right-handed shot, mm-hmm. you saw him jump into the rush yesterday. His puck skills are not at the level that Strawman's are. And if they move Klein up, and you know they could have more on the five spot, then that hurts their depth. But at the same time, you know, you have to pay a lot of guys too. So I think Strawman is going to be able to explore some options here, and I think he's going to be a valued commodity and a right-handed shot who can move the puck. But sometimes the grass isn't always greener, guys. And playing with a guy like Mark Stahl, and a second pairing
hide a lot of your flaws.
Yeah, and Henrik Lundqvist too.
Right, but you got to give him credit.
His skill level it's the whole idea of what works in today's game.
Right, and I couldn't agree with you more about how he's going to be a hot commodity if he hits the free agent market. After you mentioned he was drafted by the Leafs, to me, I'm glad Drew brought this up as the UFA of the week, because Anton Strahlman, after going to the Blue Jackets, and he put up 38 points, I think it was, with the Blue Jackets, he actually had a tryout with the New
34.
Jersey. Yeah. He had a tryout with the New Jersey Devils. He was a free agent, and the Devils gave him a tryout, and that was back in 2010, and they cut him. Don't think of a team like the New Jersey Devils, who have all types of problems on defense. A guy like Adam Larson and Jelena have had trouble cracking the Devils lineup. Strahlman is a right side defenseman. He would fit into their top four. So good for Strahlman, a guy that couldn't crack the Devils 4 years ago, and now he's a couple games away from winning a Stanley Cup, playing with Mark Stahl. Great for him, because he's a guy that really bounced around, and as you said, he kind of took a little while to develop. That's what happens with defensemen, but Strahlman, you know, Drew, you mentioned that he's made himself a lot of money, and that's what happens when you play those types of minutes, top 4 minutes, and you got to give him credit for the teams that they beat. They were beating some good teams, like even though the Flyers, they had their issues this year, Flyers, Penguins, and the Habs.
That pairing was probably their most consistent pairing.
Yes.
It's not their most skilled, but their most consistent.
Yes, and when you talk about, you're right, Richie, when you're a defenseman, especially playing with an elite defenseman, and Mark Stahl, even though he had the injury, I think he's proven that he's back to the level of, you're telling me Mark Stahl couldn't play on the Canadian Olympic team? He was a lock a couple years ago, and Anton Strahlman, even though he's not flashy and he's not the fastest skater, but he can skate, he's a solid defenseman, similar to Jake Muzzin playing with Drew Doughty. Those complementary players, think of Dennis Seidenberg with Zdeno Chara. Some of these guys are those types of defensemen that fit well. There are guys that fit well with the elite defensemen because of their style of play. They're responsible. They just make the right play. They can chip in some offense occasionally. So I think a guy like Strahlman, Richie says maybe they don't ideally want him in their top four. But I think
I think they want him in their top four.
Or they do want him in their top four.
They don't want Kevin Klein in their top four.
Oh, Kevin Klein, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think he is a guy that the Rangers would be really well advised to re-sign.
You mentioned David Legault. Pardon me. You mentioned the Detroit Red Wings as a potential suitor for Anton Strahlman. David Legault is another unrestricted free agent.
Tatar. To Kindle. Back in front. Legault scores! What a pass! Riley Sheehan to David Legault! And the Red Wings lead it 2-1. Another power play goal.
I love Kenny Daniels, by the way. Him and Mickey Redmond, that's a great combo.
Good call, Richie.
David Legault obviously spent a number of years with the Nashville Predators, was traded to the Red Wings.
Number of years, like 30 years.
That's what I'm saying. He spent a number of years there.
Him and Trotz were there since the beginning.
I know. Obviously, he spent a number of years in Nashville, was traded to Detroit at the trade deadline. He's an unrestricted free agent coming off of a six-year, $27 million contract. Older, obviously, than Anton Strahlman is. He's 33 years old. He'll be 34 before the start of next season. Is he destined to stay in Detroit, do
you
think?
No, I mean, you look at the middle, Drew. You got Datsyuk and Zetterberg, both can play center. Steven Weiss on a deal, 4.9 for the next 4 years. Darren Helm, who can play center. You have Joakim Andersson, who can play center if you need him to. Riley Sheehan, who can play center. There's no room for him there. They're not going to be paying him to play there. I don't think. I think Legault was a stopgap for them to make a little bit of a run here with all their injuries. I think Legault's going elsewhere. I don't think he's coming back to Detroit. It just doesn't make sense.
I think there's a good chance you're right. He was a rental player for the Detroit Red Wings, thinking that they could grab him, and they gave up a conditional third-round pick. Eves and Kelly Jankrok. Jankrok was the other prospect involved in that trade, and they were thinking that he would hopefully help them get past the first round and maybe beyond. And they weren't bad, actually. And you look at David Legault, he's 33 years old. We've talked about all of these teams that have needs at second line center, whether it's the Anaheim Ducks, the Chicago Blackhawks. They're probably teams that could use a guy like David Legouin. He had 51 points this year, guys. So David Legouin at 33 years old, he's got 3 or 4 years left of good hockey mm-hmm. left in him. So it's not like he's a guy that's looking for one more year out of his career. I think he's a guy that can still contribute offensively. We saw how good he was a few years back with the Nashville Predators in the playoffs. 2010 was a point a game player almost with the Predators. He's a big game player, and I think a lot of teams would like to have his services. I guess it's a little bit tricky, Richie, with what his contract would be because of the fact that maybe he's not at that elite second line center. He's still maybe a little bit step below. He's a good second line center.
I think he's your lower end second line center.
Yeah.
But I think he can play in different situations, which helps you. And he's a big guy who can skate. And offensive skills aren't what they always hoped he'd be when he was drafted out of Plymouth. But he can play your second line center slot. And we talked about guys that are available, whether it be Spezza. We haven't spoken about Paul Stastny, who we've talked about on UFA the week before.
Yeah.
Where do these guys all go? He can be a flex guy, too, for you. I mean, that's why Chicago makes so much
sense
here.
That's what I was going to say there.
Because, you know, him and Shaw can switch.
I just said Chicago.
I know.
Well, and I was going to say that also.
But I said it first. And then Drew's trying to take claim for...
Yeah, that's a piggyback
there. He's trying to take claim for the big salad.
He's going to take a wheatgrass shot. But you look at it, you know, with him and Shaw, righty-lefty guys, and you see who you're going to play the, you know, match up on the wings. The ability to play in a fast-paced game, the ability to stay in the central in the central division. I know he went to Detroit, but the idea in the division, he knows all the competition.
Yeah,
he's a veteran; he can slot in behind Taves. It makes a lot of sense to go there, and he won't cost a fortune.
Yeah,
so I think that Chicago is the most logical fit, but we'll see.
I agree with you there. I think we're a lot of consensus on the show today.
It's never a good thing.
I'm not sure how comfortable I am about that.
And I never got to finish my story about driving to the Goldeyes game, so I'll do that after the break.
Okay, after the break, story time with Richard Pollock. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226. Or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Richard Pollock?
So driving the Goldeyes game yesterday, driving down Broadway, mm-hmm. driving east down Broadway towards the Shaw Park.
Yes.
And I see this red car turn off a side street right near my hairdresser. You know, Hunter and Gunn, my boy Jeremy. And I see this red car, and I always, you know, I look to see, is it Remus? Because Remus drives a red car.
Yeah.
It's got the spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got the spoiler, and I see him pulling from the it was maybe Furby? And he's pulling, so I'm wondering, you know, did he go for a haircut? I'm not sure if he goes there, but he's wearing a backwards hat. So you don't go for a haircut and then put a hat on. That's bad form.
Remus usually doesn't wear the backwards hat.
Remus sometimes has bad form. So I text him, and I said, you know, where were you going? He's like, well, where did you see me? It's always a sketchy question.
Yeah.
When you ask where were you? And he asks, like, where did you see me?
Yeah.
Where else were you?
I don't want to tell you.
And he still hasn't told me. He told me he was,
I know where he was.
At a pawn shop?
Yep.
Yeah.
And what were you picking up?
I recently acquired a Sega Genesis, so I was looking for some games.
What games?
I have NHL 94.
We played that last week on Super Nintendo.
I know, so I went out and had to go buy one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you have NBA Jam, too.
NBA Jam. Wow, okay.
I'm living in 1984.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Sega Jam. I had a Sega Genesis.
The only difference between now and 1994 is... You didn't have a girlfriend back then, and now you do, at least for the time being.
I thought you were at the pawn shop looking for like a ring, maybe. Maybe Lord of the Rings the game, but
that's funny.
Brian Murray is going to expect a decent return, and you know, initially our sense was he's looking for the same type of return that he had to give to acquire Bobby Ryan, and you know, frankly, he's not going to get that. I talked to a manager today with some interest who said, you know, Brian should expect a late first round pick and maybe a prospect or a different draft pick and a player. I don't know if that's going to be good enough for Brian Murray, but with some of the other centers that are also in play, Spezza's market value may not be as high as what they're hoping.
He's not going to get what he got for Bobby Ryan. Well, then you don't trade Jason Spezza.
Well, that's
sorry.
That's TSN's Darren Dreger talking about the Jason Spezza trade rumors. The fact, or, I mean, Brian Murray came out and said that
you're not trading Jason Spezza for a late first round pick and a prospect.
We talked about this before.
What,
Richie? One of the teams.
Sorry, buddy, you're not going anywhere. Then
one of the teams that was disposed by the LA Kings, who desperately needs this an elite second line center, is the Anaheim Ducks. You don't think Bob Murray and Brian Murray can make a trade that saw Anaheim give that pick back to Ottawa with, say, a prospect like an Emerson Edom or a Devontae Smith-Pelly, something
still
like that?
You're not getting...
Well, and maybe another player, another roster player, something like that. I mean, I'm not saying Anaheim and Ottawa are going to trade picks, trade players again. I'm just saying similar type of trade. I think you're right. You're not
going to... Patrick Berglund from St. Louis, who I don't love either.
Well, it's going to have to be, if it's going to be a late first round pick, Richie, it's going to have to be two roster players. Jason Spezza is still a number one center in the NHL.
In my opinion, he is. I know he gets a lot of flack, and I don't know what went on there that he is demanding trade. I know that they're pretty hard on him media wise, but I wonder what went on there.
It seems like there's more to the story.
I don't know. I just feel like he's kind of been the whipping boy for a long time, and I don't really know why.
Yeah,
you guys know that I'm a big fan of his. He's a great player. He creates for his teammates. But I don't care if he's a UFA after this upcoming season. If you're going to get a late first-round pick and a prospect for him, just ride it out. I mean,
at least hold on to it till the trade deadline.
Yeah, exactly. And see what you're doing with your team-wise and see how you're faring. They should hope for a bounce-back season. But you also have Bobby Ryan now as a UFA after the season. I mean, it's a little bit of a mess there in terms of what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. I mean, if you trade Spezza before the start of next season, don't you have to look into trading Bobby Ryan at the same time and maybe even Craig Anderson? Obviously, you can't get as much for Craig Anderson.
Well, I mean, some would argue Kyle Turris was their number one center for part of last season. But I do think, Drew, you have to consider that for sure. And in that case, are you then changing from an offensive to a defensive team?
Well, and also, are you rebuilding?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Jason Spezza last year, 66 points. He becomes the captain after Alfie goes to Detroit. And playing on that line with Ryan and Mihalik, they weren't spectacular. They weren't the best line in hockey, but a bona fide solid number one line in hockey. But what was the problem in Ottawa last year? The goaltending and the defense. After
team Eric, defense too.
Team defense and you know Richie's right. Jason Spezza, a few years back, he was questioned for his maybe tenacity and all that in the playoffs.
He's not great defensively.
He's not a physical player, but Jason Spezza. You guys remember that goal that he scored against the Winnipeg Jets? He undressed the entire team.
Yep.
And then Andre Pavlik. He's still one of the most dynamic offensive players, and a lot of teams will be lining up and I imagine are calling Brian Murray about Jason Spezza. It just happens to be a match situation where what are you giving back? But it's going to be tough for the Ottawa Senators guys to get someone back that's as good as Jason Spezza.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Even a middle-round, first-round pick here. I mean, you're talking about 3-4 years down the road where he's going to have any effect.
The other kind of, you know, we're talking what would come back for Jason Spezza, a late first-round pick, an early first-round pick, mid-first-round pick prospect. I think if the Ottawa Senators are, probably doing their due diligence, I imagine they are considering getting a defenseman back and then maybe with a draft pick because that's where they're the weakest. I mean, you've got some talent there in Ottawa, and
if you trade Spezza, though, look at their offensive talent. Keep in mind, Mihalik's a UFA. Yep. Hemsky, who they acquired mm-hmm. at the deadline's a UFA. Mm-hmm. If you trade Spezza, I mean, you got Bobby Ryan, who's a good player.
Well, he's a UFA after this season.
So yeah. I think if you trade Spezza, you also have to trade Ryan. Because, I mean, Bobby Ryan, Kyle Turris, and Clark MacArthur.
True, they have no chance making the playoffs if they trade Spezza and they don't get any kind of players back.
Well, even if they get Patrick Berglund back, like you mentioned, because St. Louis and Nashville are talked about as potential destinations for Spezza. Anaheim makes a lot of sense.
I agree with your point, though, that maybe you trade Ryan and Spezza and you get a haul of younger players and you try and build, you know, that kind of a rebuild on the fly somewhat.
Well, just maybe build your team around Erik Karlsson and
Robin Leonard if you think he's the guy.
Because you don't have enough offensive talent to do anything. I mean, up front, you just don't. I mean, Kyle
Turris. And he's your best offensive player, Spezza.
Yeah. I mean, it's just there's.
It's a weird thing. I didn't. It's going to be low first round, late first round pick. I just don't think that's. I mean, he's still. I know he's 30, but his skills will translate. I think he's never been the best skater. I don't think it's going to hold him back. Really, he can play on the power play. He's actually got a really good shot, wrist and slap, but doesn't shoot enough. I know he's a similar player to Ryan Getzlaff. Maybe that would make Anaheim a little more hesitant. Maybe they want to lean on him, looking at more of a Ryan Kesler type player. But there are a lot of teams where he would just fit beautifully up the middle.
Oh, I think 29 other teams would love to have Jason Spezza on their roster because he's a talent that doesn't come around every day.
Well, that's true, Drew. But I mean, you know, you're gonna pay him. You're gonna pay him after this one.
Yeah.
And are you gonna pay him number one center dollars? I don't think every team would want him, but I think lots of teams would want him.
He's 31 years old. So he's 31 years old. He actually turned 31 yesterday. Happy birthday, Jason Spezza. We're talking about trade rumors on the day of your birthday. So I mean,
he asked for a trade. So
yeah, obviously. I mean, would you pay him 4 years and $28 million? Match the $7 million he's making right now.
Absolutely, you do. I think you put Jason Spezza in the right situation, and he can get back to maybe not 90 points, but I think he can. He's still got a 75, 80 point ceiling in him, and he's not. Jason Spezza is not by any means.
You're paying him 4 years.
His career.
Let me get in here, Ezzie. If you're paying him 4 years, $28 million, though, he's your number one center.
I mean,
you'd hope so. Yeah.
I mean, fine. Only 1 year in the last, five has he put up anything. Has he put up really 80 points? And that was in 11-12 when he had 84. Last year he had 66 points, 57 in 62 games. A couple years back, 57 and 60. A couple years before that.
He's a 70 plus guy point pretty easily if he stays healthy. I think, Drew. I think if you're St. Louis, you're looking at him being your first line center. Skill-wise, obviously more than Backes, but maybe Backes plays the role with Oshie and Steen. We don't know. But I think the other teams are talking about, paying him $7 million. I mean, you're paying him top dollar there. And is he going to be your number one center against Anze Kopitar? And against Jonathan Toews and against Ryan Getzlaff? Because I don't think he's as good as any of those three players. And I like Jason Spezza.
And Richie, you'd have to hope that it's not, again, at 31 years old, he can... It's not that he doesn't play defensive hockey, but you'd hope that under Ken Hitchcock, he can get better mileage out of him defensively, playing on a more defensive team.
But does
team.
That come at the cost of offense, though, Ezzie? Because he's not that fast, right? So, you're going to get back in the play.
I'm okay. Jason Spezza, if he's not great in his own zone, but he's still giving me 75 points, I'm okay with that. You just shelter him. You give his defensive responsibilities to other people.
Well, you look at Backes, Spezza up the middle. That's not bad.
Better than him and Berglund.
Yeah.
Yeah, Backes and Berglund for sure. I agree with that. But, and they have enough pieces. They have so many pieces, St. Louis, they can flip some players.
And you look at Ottawa, too. I really do think this team is going to be rebuild. And I think you look at, we mentioned the defense, and Cody Ceci was drafted in 2012. You got Jared Cowan there. These guys are a few years away from being elite defensemen. They're good defensive prospects. But I think you trade Jason Spezza, as Richie mentioned, and you bring in a Patrick Berglund and maybe a prospect.
See, I don't,
you're rebuilding.
I mean, I can't say I wouldn't do it for Berglund because I don't love Berglund, but if the other offers aren't as good and he's a pending UFA, you may have no choice. And then you have to talk about the long-term vision. It's exactly right. Is this long-term? Is this short-term rebuild? What are we going to do? Is the pick more valuable for us than the player? Brian, questions. I mean, a team like New York Rangers, though.
Yeah, they would need a guy like
when
that.
When you go out and you Florida give Panthers, up, you give maybe up they want that first-round pick, Richie, you give up the first-round pick and you give up Silverberg to get Ryan, and it didn't work out. They were a playoff team. I thought they would be a playoff team this year. They just weren't quite good enough defensively. You have to start talking about whether you want to call it a big rebuild or a small rebuild. Mm-hmm. I think in Ottawa, you're looking at they got to restock the cupboards here in Ottawa.
If you're trading Spezza, I think you're trading Ryan alongside with him.
Signing Ryan, then you're getting a couple young guys. I agree, Drew. You're at a crossroads here for sure.
Yeah,
there's no question about it.
Well, and when you say that, it might not. When you say that, we should qualify that. It doesn't mean to the same team.
No,
it
no,
means that it
yeah.
means that you're moving both of them to get parts to make your team better. They need. We know they're going to trade Spezza. It's pretty clear that Murray's said that they're going to trade. Brian Murray said they're going to trade Spezza. It's just a question: do they try to get a roster player, or do they try to get a couple prospects and a draft pick? Most likely, as Drager said, it's most likely going to be the draft pick and the prospects. And boy, when we say prospects, we don't necessarily mean players.
Fringe
that,
guys.
We're saying younger players that are still in the developmental stage of their careers.
It'll be interesting. We'll find out in the next couple of weeks, more than likely. Let's go ahead to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
There's likely to be a coach's challenge for those types of things, and maybe even some of the penalties, like an incorrectly called penalty. If a defenseman shoots the puck up over the glass and gets assessed the delay of game, and the coach believes, hey, that deflected off the glass or it deflected off a stick, I'm going to throw a challenge flag on that. Those are the types of things they're looking at, but they don't want to open the can of worms of something as subjective as goaltender interference. And I myself think that you need to find a way to include that. And if that means letting the referees reevaluate their work in the penalty box, so be it. But I don't think that's on the horizon.
TSN's Bob McKenzie talking after the NHL general managers meetings earlier this week in New York.
By the way, I can't wait till Bob, now that the NHL playoffs are over, I can't wait. Bob McKenzie starts tweeting about wine and golfing and fishing.
And being on his cottage up in Muskoka. Yeah, making us all jealous. I mean, he has a nice cottage. By the looks of the pictures, he's got a nice cottage.
I thought you've been there.
No, I haven't gotten the invite. It's odd. I'm waiting for it, but I just haven't received it
yet. We might see him at the draft. We'll talk to him.
Yeah, we'll ask him for the invite. We'll just squat in the back of your cottage, Bob, if you don't mind. NHL general managers, as I mentioned, they met in New York City earlier this week. Four topics of conversation: coaches' challenge system, the expanded video review, the possibility of expanded video review, modifications to the draft lottery system, and the elimination of embellishment. Those were the four main topics that they discussed. You know, I don't know about you guys, but much like the Phoenix Coyotes ownership situation, and there's another one, I can't remember what else is on our banned topic list, but I'm getting pretty close to putting the coaches challenge system and discussions about that. I'm close to proposing that makes it onto our banned topics list here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, well, I guess you want to start with that. There are a lot of topics here that are covered, the trapezoid.
We'll get to the competition committee stuff a little bit.
That's the competition committee, but the coaches challenge, it had some legs, Richie, I think, a few years ago, and it looks like it doesn't really have legs, but it keeps being brought up at these general managers' meetings. I think for me, it all goes back to, I do believe something like goaltender interference. I know Richie disagrees with me. I do think the goaltender interference, something like that. I don't think there are major problems. And I know Gary Bettman was on Hustler and Lawless, and he was talking about, he thinks, even in the age of social media, he thinks the referees are doing a better job than ever. And I agree. I mean, the referees...
I actually thought he was going to say they're doing a worse job.
We
should have Gary Bettman answer questions, just translate them after he answers them.
Well, anyways...
The game has never been better. They could be throwing beer bottles at him, empty beer bottles at him, and the game could be 10-0 and a sweep, and he'd be, the game has never been stronger.
Well, yeah, he was saying that during the lockout.
Yeah, never been stronger.
Really, Gary? There's no hockey.
And then he gets a lockout. The game is in dire straits.
I think with that,
you can't succeed without another taking more money from the, giving the players less money.
Drew, I think this is Richie's rant here.
I think we're getting him revved up at the very least.
No, but the coach's challenge thing's not happening.
It's not happening for next season. I think it's going to happen for maybe the year after that.
You're going to throw a flag on the ice?
I don't think so. Drew.
I think so. It's
I don't think that'll happen.
It'll be like Roger Nielsen
waving
the
NBA
towel.
Replay? Oh, so long and boring.
Richie, is it not just making the video review better? And they always do this anyways. They're constantly, there's constantly self checks with the system anyways. To me, there have been issues, but that's just up to the referees, the director of officiating, to make sure that they're looking out for these things more. I don't think that there's any systematic problem with video review or NHL refereeing. I think, you know, people watch games and they say, oh, the refereeing's terrible. This is completely slanted one way. Trust me, these guys are reviewed. We've talked to Carey Fraser about this, Richie. And these refs want to be in the playoffs, by the way. So if they don't have a good review during the regular season, they don't get to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, I think the referees do a good job. Do they make mistakes? Of course. They're human beings. I make mistakes all the time. I made a mistake on the drive over here.
You went to the wrong studio.
Yeah, I went to the wrong studio. I went to that other station. But, no, I mean, the coach's challenge to me, is that really going to make the game better?
It's got nothing to talk about, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. I think they bring it up and then it doesn't have... I think a couple years ago it has legs. Was it Kenny Holland that liked it? Maybe it wasn't Kenny Holland, but I know one of the GMs...
I don't mind if they have a guy overseeing the raising the puck and the tips, and then just somebody upstairs and he calls down if he thinks it's an incorrect call. We don't need a coach's challenge, guys.
No.
Yeah. I don't need coaches challenge. And stop with the subjective stuff. If there's goalie interference, it's goalie interference. Deal with it.
Well, ref, to me, that's they got to call that better.
No, I don't think they do.
I think they, well, okay.
It's, how do you, I mean, honestly, you could watch
how do you know when the goalie? How do you know
angles?
When the goalie is like, you know, like the Dwight King Lundqvist one? It was an obvious call. Well, yeah, it was an obvious call, sure. How many times the goalies just get touched and they dance around and they dive down? You have to be on the ice, you have to feel the game.
That's
the pace
something
of the
that
game.
I think is correlated. I think the diving, I mean, Thomas Plekanec, we saw in the Montreal Canadiens, don't mean to pick on him.
Well, yeah, sure, pick on him. He dove.
That was terrible.
Or he dived.
I mean, he wasn't touched and he dove. So that stuff,
to
me, is ridiculous. It's really shameful. And you can't do that stuff in hockey. And I think what they have to do is maybe start looking at...
If you watch the soccer, man?
If a guy gets a couple of diving penalties, maybe he even gets a suspension. I mean, that's really unsportsmanlike, in my opinion.
Well, that's the NBA thing. They have their flopping rule, and you get fined, and I think you get suspended if you get fined a certain amount of times.
If you flop more than, I don't know, 48 times.
That's if you can watch the NBA these days. Although the Spurs are enjoyable to watch, but the rest of the league is pretty hard to watch.
The Spurs is like watching basketball art, almost.
That's right.
Yeah. You know,
they move the ball so quickly.
In terms of expanded video review, I think that they should review, you know, if it's a clear-cut yes or no. You know, did the players, you know, a puck over glass, did it actually deflect off something?
Yeah.
I'm okay if they review that. But goaltender interference is so subjective.
It's not like, what I'm saying is you have a guy upstairs, he buzzes down if he thinks it's been a call with a bad call with the puck over the glass. That's really it.
Yeah.
The rest, leave it to the refs.
You're right. I don't need the head coach, waiting to, you know, stalling like they do at baseball. Is interminable.
Oh, God, I know.
How they
stand out there and just talk until there's a thumbs
that,
up in the dugout?
That's something that goes to, is the coach's challenge, is the expanded video review, is that going to make the game better? And if it makes it slower, one of the best things about hockey is it's the fastest game, and mm-hmm. you want it to stay like that. We talked about this, the Chicago-LA overtime that had 8 minutes almost without a whistle. I mean, for a hockey fan, that was better than, you know, being in Chocolate Land.
Not sure what Chocolate Land is.
Chocolate Land?
Like a land that's just everything's chocolate. Like you're walking down the street.
Like Willy Wonka?
Like cars are chocolate. You can take a bite of anything. You know,
no,
Homer.
I understand.
Remember when he goes to Chocolate Land and he's just skipping around in Chocolate Land?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
I know. I mean, I understand the reference. It's just bizarre that you brought it up on air.
Well, I'm just saying that overtime was great. It was Nirvana. Not the band. It was a utopic type of feeling.
Richard, do you know what he's talking about?
I don't, but I stop listening. But, you know, these guys, like, need meetings. Like, they need to have things to talk about, and they need to have things to...
They need to have a meeting about a meeting.
Yeah, they love meetings.
Pre-meetings,
you know?
And post-meetings.
And then everybody on Twitter is, oh, there should be instant replay on everything. It's like, you know, you have to listen to Twitter every time one controversy happens. If people are so obsessed with the little things now. Is it that big of a deal? One call, goaltender interference. Well, if you watch the Nashville-Dallas game, sometimes there's bad calls, you know? Just deal with it.
Yeah.
Kill the penalty and move on.
Well, you know what? And can you honestly tell me, you know, goaltender interference, and then you look at a different angle. Well, maybe it's not as bad
as we
thought.
Why don't we put it up to the review and have 10 refs look at it and get 7 different opinions? And, you know.
I think, you know, Chris King and the War Room in Toronto, they do a good job. I think they might miss a call once in a while. And as you said, that happens. There's going to be mistakes. Like, that's, you, if you understand that.
It kind of makes the game better, I think.
It makes it more honest.
Yeah, it makes it more real.
Yeah.
Until you can get a foolproof system.
Which doesn't exist.
You know, let the chips fall as they may.
That's right. You know,
why not just have a robot making the calls?
Yeah, seriously.
Because that robot hasn't been invented yet. Who would be perfect?
If you got Remus in here talking about video review in baseball, as Richie mentioned, I don't think it's been going so great.
It's just, you know, it's so ridiculous. The manager slowly trots out.
Oh, my God.
You know, goes and talks to the umpires about their families.
Yeah.
And then waits for a thumbs up or a thumbs down from his bench coach. Like, that's the... I mean, you shouldn't be allowed out of the dugout until you're going to challenge... Until you know you want to challenge him.
If you want to get into the baseball, you should have to make your call within 10 seconds. It should be that blatant of a missed call that you challenge immediately or you don't challenge.
Yeah, because that's a whole...
But even then, again, the challenge... I'm not a big fan of all this stuff.
What I do like...
Human error has been a part of sports because it's played by humans... Forever, and I'm not.
Robot hockey's coming pretty soon, Drew.
Yeah, well,
two topics to come out of these meetings that I really like. Two issues are the trapezoid.
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, I mentioned that at the beginning of the segment because I've said this time and time again. The trapezoid, the Marty Brodeur rule, should be taken out completely. And I do like the focus on the embellishment because that was embarrassing. They got to penalize these guys more for doing this because I hate just that part of the game.
Leave it to the refs. They should just tell them. They should, you know, from above, tell them you want to call more embellishment. They'll call it. Yep. And the Trapezoid should just be completely abolished anyways.
Yeah. And so what they've decided, not to abolish it because that would be too easy, they are expanding the Trapezoid so the goaltenders are allowed to play the puck in 2 feet wider of a Trapezoid.
Just get rid of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop trying to dance around it. Just get rid of it.
I asked Marty Brodeur himself the first year the Jets were back, and he said,
get away from me.
Hates it. And yeah, exactly.
He said, sir, why are you not wearing a t-shirt?
Why are you following me to the hotel room?
Things that the general managers approved following recommendations from the competition committee. They're moving the hash marks on the face-off circles further apart so that there's going to be more space between the wingers when they drop the puck, just like they're doing in the Olympics.
That's a minor change.
Yeah. And the teams
they're not going to stand on the wrong side of the hash marks ever. It's come on, guys. Yeah.
And then the teams are going to change ends during overtime. So it'll be a longer change during overtime.
That's fine. I like that. That's good.
It might create more offense, which would create less shootouts, which we're all in favor of over here.
Yeah. That's the only one I think is actually necessary. The rest of them, I think, are just doing things because they're bored.
Yeah. Well, they didn't actually do anything. They talked about things.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, but they need to talk about something, right?
Yeah.
I play Candy Crush when I'm bored.
You just crush candy is actually what you do. You just eat a lot of candy.
Yeah.
Let's head to break. We'll talk about some trade rumors. We'll talk about NHL news and notes upcoming. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Oh, I think they'd probably kick tires on Joel Thornton. I'm not sure Joel Thornton has interest in playing in Toronto. He's got a no-move clause, and right now I don't think Joel Thornton wants to play anywhere except San Jose. Except I'm not convinced that by the time it's all said and done that San Jose will necessarily want him, and that's not firm, but you know, there's going to be change in San Jose. We know that. But they didn't change the general manager and they didn't change the coach. That only leaves one option, change the players.
TSN's Bob McKenzie talking about Joe Thornton and the possibility, some rumors.
Is this the Cranberries?
Yes, it is. But
it's kind of apt as I'm wearing an Irish soccer jersey here.
And you came here with a bag of cranberries.
It meets the citrus requirements for today.
And I'm
A lot of talk about Joe Thornton maybe being on the trade market, and Patrick Marleau as well. Both guys just signed 3-year contract extensions during the season to stay in San Jose and presumably end their careers in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the quote from John Thornton. That's Joe's brother. He's also his agent. If he felt the fans didn't want him in San Jose, he might rethink things. John Thornton said when asked if his brother would want to play where it was apparent he was not wanted. He goes on to say, he's perfectly happy there right now. He wants to stay there and win the cup. He believes they still have enough talent.
They have enough talent. Sure do have enough talent.
Am I the only one who finds this talk about Joe Thornton and Marleau being on the trade block a little bit bizarre?
Well, it's bizarre. It's bizarre because they just signed 4 months ago.
Yeah. I mean, you wanted them to be, you know, granted you wanted them to sort of transition in the latter parts of their careers, but you signed them to 3 years, $21 million. Just because they choked. I mean, I still think you'd want them on. You know, how do you replace Joe Thornton? What kind of trade value do you get that makes your team better?
Well, Richie, I think Joe also Thornton? The conversation has to turn to a team like the San Jose Sharks being able to deal with the loss of Patrick Marleau or Joe Thornton a lot better than Ottawa can deal with the loss of Jason Spezza or Bobby Ryan. They've got more depth there with Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski. And a pretty good defenseman in Vlasic and a good goalie in Niemi. They can, and you talk about the youth, the Matt Nietos and the Thomas Hurdles. They can deal with that a little bit better. But yeah, if you're talking about trading Marleau and Thornton, you're going to have to replace them with pretty good players because those guys, even though they haven't taken that next step, Richie, and got the city of San Jose a Stanley Cup, they're still elite players. And so, to me, you know, that's why the comments by John Thornton, who was Joe Thornton's brother, are puzzling. Because, I mean, they don't say things like that in the media unless they kind of want to say that stuff. So, I mean, is Joe Thornton looking to get out there? Has he kind of had enough of the Todd McClellan, kind of that era there, the Doug Wilson era? It's tough to say. I mean, to me, if this team is serious about winning a Stanley Cup, those guys, you'd think at least one of them would be a huge part of that because they've been there for so long.
You know what? I think they want to. They finally decided they need to make a change, and they feel like Marlowe or Thornton are those guys that would change the atmosphere or the mood in that locker room, which is pretty interesting considering they didn't realize that until now.
After they signed him to
a 3-year
extension.
I think it's more Thornton than Marlowe. Yeah, both of them. That's what I'm saying. Like, we didn't realize that until now. Did you watch the past 7-8 playoff failures? How many playoff series has that team lost where they were the favorite? Don't give me, we made it to the second round 10 years ago. I don't care. I don't care. Did you win?
They were up 3-0. You got to finish that off.
How many times are you going to blow easy? How many times are you going to blow your chance? Well, so finally they're realizing that. Now they want to trade him. Well, you know, if I'm Joe Thornton, first off, these trades give the player a lot of power. But if I'm the player and I'm not wanted, I want out.
Yep.
Now, I don't care if he's going to hold it over them and go where he wants to go because that's his right. My issue with Joe Thornton is if he's going to try and go to the Chicago and mooch a cup. No. You're Joe Thornton. You're going to be in the Hall of Fame. If you want to win a cup, go win a cup as the guy or close to it.
I don't have a problem with him going to Chicago or going to
that's fine. Go for it. But your cup doesn't mean as much as if
that's
you
fine.
Want,
I mean, it's part of your hockey obituary.
That's the Luke Robitaille.
Yeah, it's part of your hockey obituary that you were not able to
but
leave.
It's not
a team.
The Ray Bourque because Ray Bourque came over.
Well, and he was a big part of that.
That
team.
Was a huge part of it. And if you slot in behind, he didn't slot in. He played. Adam Foote was there. Rob Blake was there. Mm-hmm. He didn't slot in behind anybody. He was the number one left side defenseman. Joe Thornton, if he's going to Chicago, is going to go number two center.
Yeah,
different story.
That's fine, and
you could argue he's number two center, and I don't think so. That's his room. We know it's his team.
Yeah, well, that's in his hockey obituary and his epitaph is couldn't win in San Jose, did win a cup, but he had to leave to win it because he wasn't able to do it on his own.
Right,
or he wasn't able to be the driving force of a team to do it. And I don't fault the guy if he wants to go somewhere else and do it. But
no, he's fine. He's entitled. I think it would tarnish his image.
I find the whole situation to be very odd and very bizarre given the timing of everything.
Like Anaheim would be another possibility as far as again.
Joe,
we're talking about teams. You mentioned the no movement clause, Richie, giving the player power, and. This is a guy in Joe Thornton that isn't going to want to go to a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs. No offense to Leafs fans, but this isn't a team that is on the cusp of winning a Stanley Cup. Joe Thornton, at 34 years old, I think he is now, who's got 3, maybe 4 years left of really good hockey. He wants to go to a team that right now is a solid Stanley Cup contender. So you're talking Chicago, maybe, even though I don't know they have the pieces or want him. Even though I see what the connection Richie's making, but is it an Anaheim? Is it a Detroit? Is it Detroit?
You're gonna go to Anaheim after they like get disposed of you in playoffs before and all that stuff. You're gonna slot in behind a guy Getzlaff who you faced off against. I don't know.
Well, but I'm just saying that's what you're doing. You're slotting him behind a Taves. The same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's
same thing. Same thing. Yeah.
I don't disagree with you there. It's just very bizarre. Joe Haggerty of Comcast Sportsnet out in Boston expressed the possibility of a Brad Marchand to San Jose in exchange for Patrick Marlowe. Here's Bruins general manager Peter Chiarelli. I have had no discussions for Marchand, and I have no plans to trade him. I don't make it a practice to respond to reports in the social media, but occasionally it is necessary. So, I mean, Patrick Marlowe, I think, is, does Thornton have much more value on the trade market than Marlowe does at this point?
That's a good question, Drew. I mean, Marlowe can play center and wing. He is a faster player. I think Thornton gets you a tad more, but not much more. I think Patrick Marlowe is able to play in a supporting role as well as a supporting role in a host of way, meaning like basically a core player who's just supporting Kane Taves.
He's not the spotlight's not on him. Thornton's
a very good
big personality.
He's very good both ways. He's a good two-way player.
Yeah.
So I mean, Thornton is a big personality. Yeah, I think Marlowe will fit in well. I think he'll fit in more seamlessly with his new team than I think Thornton probably will. Now, Thornton's good in the room. Everybody likes Joe Thornton. Yeah. Seems like the nicest guy you're ever going to meet. Mm-hmm. Sometimes too nice.
Yeah, but I mean, if your dressing room is sort of at this level, just sort of he's going to cause spikes in your dressing room because he is such a big personality and he is such a by all accounts a very jovial guy. So if that's not going to fit into your dressing room persona, it will take more of an adjustment than Patrick Marlowe would, who's just going to sort of. Not lunch bucket kind of guy, but he's going to come in, he's going to play hockey, he's going to do his thing. You don't hear much about him, you don't hear much from him. He just sort of, he gives sort of he's a generic hockey cliche almost. Whereas Thornton's going to talk is going to be more of a personality, in that sense of the word. Signing from in the NHL earlier this week, that came out of Tampa Bay, where Andre Palat signs.
What a steal! Takes it behind the net. A wrap around try. Is it in? No goal.
Yes,
score!
Sir.
Score!
It's a goal.
It's in. Big, big goal. Andre Palat.
Andre Palat signs a 3-year, $10 million contract in Tampa Bay.
Matching. You would have thought that was a Stanley Cup final call.
Yeah, it was a little emotional there.
He got the same money as Tyler Johnson. They're locking him into these second deals. It's good value. Both of them had very nice performances this year with very little attention paid to them. And next year, which should be interesting to see with more attention paid to them, I think both media-wise, if there's a lot of media in Tampa Bay, but more so, I think NHL-wise, seeing you know what they made on their first go, what they're making now, and they're getting paid to be performers. I have no issue with it, though. This is fair value, I think, for both sides.
Yeah,
you mentioned Tyler Johnson, Richie. Yeah. Palat, along with Johnson, both 23 years old, older rookies, I should say. Both guys that had excellent rookie seasons and were a huge reason why Tampa Bay was able to still hold on to a top Eastern Conference seeding, even though Steven Stamkos was injured. So as Richie mentioned, good value, a good second contract. He was drafted 208th overall in the 2011 draft, so that's looking like an absolute steal.
Absolutely.
He's got good wheels, he's got a good shot, great offensive player. And like Johnson, another one of those guys that came up with John Cooper through the AHL, And we've talked about this before. Even though the Lightning looked horrible in the first round against the Montreal Canadiens, the future is really bright there. And Stevie Yzerman's doing a good job locking these guys up.
And another key is that both Johnson and Palat come off those deals as RFAs. So they don't sign them into their UFA year.
Right.
And I think that gives the team flexibility. Now the player will be arbitration eligible, will have leverage themselves, but the team also retains control.
One other signing.
Plays it over to Drew on the half wall. Back to the middle point. Kimmo Timonen looking through the traffic in front of the net. Gives it to Voracek. Quick pass over to Drew. Back to Timonen with a drive. He scores! A power play goal by Kimmo Timonen. That's the 33rd goal by a Flyer defenseman this year. And Philadelphia has their second of the game. It's 4-2.
Kimmo Timonen re-signs in Philadelphia for 1 year, $2.0 million. Seems like he probably could have gotten a little bit more on the open market, but he's been comfortable in Philadelphia for a number of years now, and I guess he just wanted to stay there and keep doing what he's been doing.
Well, Ron Hextall's GM now.
Right. So?
They paid Andrew McDonough $5 million. So if he would have signed, if he made his decision in March, he would have probably got $5
million. Yeah, Richie, I think it's quite evident that Kimmo Timonen isn't a number one defenseman anymore, and he's lost a step. This might be his last NHL contract. He's had an excellent career, 1,000-plus games. He still can put up decent offensive numbers and still be a guy that can quarterback the power play. But as we saw, the Flyers' defense was slow, and they got Andrew McDonald, who's a great shot blocker, good physical defenseman, small defenseman, who was the number one defenseman, really, for the Islanders the last few years. Two after Hamonic. He's top pairing guy. And I think they paid him quite a bit of money. But, this is most likely his last contract. But he's still a guy that they feel like can be a huge part of the team as they kind of welcome in other defensemen. Shane Gostisbehere is a guy that was a Hobie Baker candidate. He's a guy I think that look out next year might be a guy that makes the team.
And they drafted Sam Moran in the first round a couple years ago.
But I mean, they still want him to develop.
Yeah,
and that
still
was a bit of a project pick, and they had Pronger working with him and different guys. Yep. But their defense isn't great. He still helps move the puck. He's not the biggest guy. Again, as you mentioned, he's kind of lost some speed. But it certainly helps depth-wise, and he's a skilled defenseman on a team that has a mix of D that just can't really... that are overpaid, frankly. Yep. Let's be honest here. That group of D that's overpaid...
They got to address that.
He's now underpaid, which is good.
Let's head to break. When we come back, John McKinnon, columnist with the Edmonton Journal, joins us to talk about the changes in Edmonton. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now,
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show a columnist with the Edmonton Journal, John MacKinnon. John, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good morning, guys.
John, brought you on, obviously, to talk about the Oilers. They made a big hire yesterday in hiring Bob Nicholson as vice chairman of Oilers Entertainment Group. Really, first question, what exactly does that mean?
That's a good question. I think Oilers Entertainment Group, you could think Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment and Tim Lewicki, or you could think AEG in Los Angeles. It's more sort of an overarching company that is going to manage the new arena that they're building and all of the properties surrounding it and all of the assets which you know, the Oilers, the Edmonton Oil Kings, or the WHL, their minor teams and whatever other franchises and whatever other sports they acquire.
You know, John, when you look at Bob Nicholson, is now Craig McTavish is going to be answering to him? Is that how it's going to work? And then Patrick LaForge is also going to be answering to him?
Not really. I mean, Bob is not really on the hockey side. That's what it may be somewhat confusing. He's really kind of the grand poobah who's going to execute owner Daryl Cates' vision for this entertainment district and for the overall organization. And he will have some input, I assume, whenever he wants to, into hockey operations things. But really, that's Kevin Lowe. Kevin Lowe remains in charge of the hockey operations, and McTavish reports to Lowe and so forth. I mean, they're building like a $480 million arena, mm-hmm. which is part of a larger $606.5 million entertainment district. And all of those moving parts are really what Bob will oversee.
John, you mentioned the new entertainment district. Where are we currently at with the development of the entertainment district and the new Oilers arena?
Well, they're digging the hole. They're there's a big, you know, I live actually three blocks from where that arena is going to be. There's a big hole in the ground, and they're doing work all the time. There's several huge cranes over there. By the fall, they will start installing the steel. They'll start to build the structure. And then from the fall to, like, basically for a year, starting in September or so, this is when the structure itself will go up. So it's on track, and they expect to be completed for the fall of 2016.
John, I had a professor who once told me that if you don't know the answer to the question, the answer is probably money. So when I look at this situation, is this about money at the end of the day?
Hiring Bob?
Yeah.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, his job is to leverage all of the opportunities and create new opportunities, and whatever that means. So, for example, if it means attracting hockey events like the Memorial Cup, let's say, or the World Junior Hockey Championship, or even, which would be dicier, but the World Hockey Championship or the World Basketball Championship, any kind of event you could think of that would be appropriate for this arena. And you got to keep in mind, there's going to be the big downtown arena where the Rogers Place, where the Oilers will play, and right beside it will be a community arena, which I can't remember what the seating capacity of that will be. But there's more than one facility, and it's you got to think concerts and festivals, and that's all what Bob is going to be in charge of.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Edmonton Journal columnist John MacKinnon talking about the Oilers hiring of Bob Nicholson.
I liked your headline in the on your Sweat Sox blog there, John, you know, gold rush to fool's gold or gold mine about this hire. And when you look at it, you know, from a hockey perspective, you mentioned Kevin Lowe would still be the guy that they're answering to. So at the end of the day, the Oilers structure, hockey-wise, hasn't changed at all.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
Which is a little, sorry, it's a little, I mean, the initial, well, I thought at first when Bob's name came up is that he would be kind of more hands-on on the hockey side. Mm-hmm. That has been really his bread and butter for most of his career. Although with Hockey Canada, in working in concert with Scott Smith, who is the chief operating officer there and some other people, they really did expand that operation from a relatively modest body to a much more wealthy, primarily through the World Junior Hockey Championships, right? Mm-hmm. So the big, huge cash cow for Hockey Canada, which they used to host every 5 or 7 years or whatever. But, you know, starting in 06 and through to 2021, Canada will have hosted by that, over that time span, 8 of the 16 World Junior Hockey Championships. So, and then when they do, it's just the money flows in. And through that process, primarily, and other process, other things, other brand management, Nicholson kind of grew Hockey Canada. But when he came here, I thought he was coming here more as a hockey guy.
John, I know this is a little bit off topic here. I know there were some rumblings about the Olympics. Is the city of Edmonton still serious about putting a bid in for the Winter Olympics with the new arena that's going to be built, completed, I guess, in 2 years?
I have never heard anything about the Winter Olympics coming here. Edmonton is putting in a bid for the 2022 Commonwealth Games. I have never heard a peep about the Winter Olympic bid.
I might have just made that up in my head then, John. I do that from time to time.
John, you mentioned Bob Nicholson and thinking that he might have more of a hockey-related role when he was hired. We had heard rumblings, obviously, since his announcement that he was leaving Hockey Canada, that he was going to land in some NHL city, and there were rumblings maybe Vancouver, I believe, where he was his base and home base during his tenure. I know, obviously, Hockey Canada is based in Calgary, but I believe he was in Vancouver for a large portion if he wasn't traveling. Did he try and get a job with another NHL team in more of a hockey-related role, and that he never landed that, so this was a backup possibility for him?
His name was mentioned for other opportunities, and I'm sure that he had discussions with other teams. But he's had a relationship with the Oilers organization for a long, long time, starting back when Sather was here, and through the World Hockey Championships and the Olympic process, there's been all kinds of inter kind of connections there. Kevin Lowe has been the big connection. Kate and I'm not exactly sure where that came from, but Kate's 2010 for Vancouver, he started getting involved and wanted to be part of the Olympic project. He deployed his personal, his private jet as more or less a taxi service to ferry Canadian NHL players back and forth from their NHL team to Vancouver. There was a private box that he has at Rogers Arena in Vancouver, which he put at the disposal of Hockey Canada. And there are a number of other things that he's done over the years, and he and Nicholson developed a relationship starting really in 2010, and Nicholson said yesterday that the main reason he came to Edmonton is that their relationship, and Bob is a big relationship guy. Mm-hmm. He's big about networking and building relationships. And that, he said, was the main reason he came here. That and the fact that he sees this, and we don't necessarily see the details yet, but he sees this, so-called vision of this, downtown arena and a downtown arena district, and that's sort of a transformative part of a city that is, in fact, obviously growing and strong economy. And even though the team, is all promise and no results, and has been for quite a while now, he sees that also as a big growth opportunity. So I don't think this was like plan B. I think once he started to realize what they wanted him to do here, that he thought this was a no-brainer.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Edmonton Journal columnist John McKinnon talking about the Oilers. And John, you just referred to the team as all potential and no results. Mm-hmm. That leads us into our next question. The NHL draft, obviously upcoming in 13 days' time in Philadelphia. The Oilers sitting there with the third overall pick. There's sort of one clear-cut defenseman that's at the top of the draft. That's, of course, Aaron Ekblad. The Oilers still have a need on the back end, most people would say. Do you expect the Oilers to try and move up to maybe be in a position to take Ekblad? Do you expect them to stand pat number three overall and sort of take whoever falls to them? How do you see the Oilers approaching the upcoming draft and really free agency in general?
Well, that's a good question. The Oilers have needs You know, how much time have you got, and you know, how long a list do you want me to build?
Seven years.
They have 8 years now to the playoffs, but they have a lot of needs. I'm sure they're going to try to get the first overall pick. Are they likely to succeed? I would think not. But if they did, I'm sure they would take Ekblad, because they're very thin on defense. And they don't have a top three, what I would consider even one top three defenseman. He would clearly immediately become, you know, they're basically their number one defenseman, I guess, or at least number one in training. So I'm sure they're going to try to do that. I would be skeptical if they'd succeed. They also, I mean, their two main needs are upgrading on defense and center, center ice position. And I'm fairly sure that the center ice guy they really like is Leon Draisaitl from Prince Albert, who's a big, strong. They don't have much size at forward, period, and they certainly don't have size at center. And if you're going to compete with Kopitar and Ryan Getzlaff and the big centers in the Western Conference, you need to get bigger yourself. So I think that would be what they'd want to do with that three pick, which is highly possible because only two guys are going to go before they pick at three, if that's what it comes to. That's the guy they'd want, in my view.
Final question for you, John. The Oilers did make a hiring this week behind the bench. Assistant coach Craig Ramsey was brought on. Kelly Buchberger has been transitioned into a new role of player personnel. Why? I know Craig Ramsey obviously coached the Atlanta Thrashers before they came to Winnipeg, and there was a coaching change here for Claude Noel. Why Craig Ramsey? Is this simply a veteran NHL coach there to help Dallas Eakins, who was in his first year as an NHL coach last year, and they feel like they need a little bit more experience?
I think that's bang on. Now, Eakins is a smart guy and very capable man. But he I think, was quite honest, actually, that this was a learning experience for him this past year. And, I mean, even as early as November, this is an interesting thing. The Oilers, this past season, kind of started to do their postmortems more or less in November.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the first money quote from Dallas was, I knew this was going to be a messy renovation, but I didn't think it was going to be this messy. And part of the renovation was they had a new coach who was first year in the NHL, and he was learning. So, Craig Ramsey's experience and technical expertise in a variety of areas is much needed, and he can only help them. On the power play, for one thing, and they had a power play that actually wasn't too bad at home, but it was not very good on the road. And one of the quirks of the power play, they gave up, 13 league leading 13, I think it was, shorthanded goals against.
Wow.
So, I mean, they have all kinds of technical areas to address. They're not a great team, without the puck, and on the defensive side of things, they need a lot of instruction. So Ramsey will help, and I think also, and this is a lesser issue for them, but I think it's a bigger issue for the public. There's a perception here that this is too much of an old boys club. Mm-hmm. You got mm-hmm. Kevin Lowe and McTavish and Bucky and Steve Smith, and without in any way detracting from the experience and the skill sets of those individuals, the public looks at this and says, well, they're just, surrounding themselves with their pals. And so Ramsey clearly has a certain connection to Eakins through Roger Nielsen. Both of them were Roger Nielsen kind of players.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they may have overlapped at some point in their careers briefly. In Florida, if I'm not mistaken, when Ramsey was there, Eakins was a player. But they have similar philosophy about the game, and I think it will help Eakins considerably to have that experience. And Ramsey is essentially a very highly respected coach, so it can only help them. But the real needs we've already touched on, their needs are talent. I mean, they're, and so I'm sure Ramsey will help. but it'll help him way more to upgrade on the talent side.
John McKinnon is a columnist with the Edmonton Journal. John, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Pleasure, guys.
Take care.
Thanks a lot, John.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest running independent comedy club in North America. For over 25 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. With the playoffs coming to an end yesterday, what has been your least favorite prominent expression that has been overly used during the past 2 months?
Puck luck, probably.
I don't like puck luck.
People just use a phrase and they just overuse it and overuse it and overuse it. And oh, that was that.
I've said this
annoying before.
You hit the post. That's not bad luck. That's not scoring. So, yeah, sure, there is luck. And you look at Game 4 guys when those pucks were on the line, and then everybody remembers Derek Stepan.
There's that little everybody says, yeah. Can you count?
But I'm
just hearing sense together for God's sake.
I'm just saying though that it doesn't go in. Sure, you might call that luck, but puck luck's pretty bad. I'll have to go with Richie on that one.
There's four sayings people recycle.
That was why I asked the question, because I knew it would set you off.
Puck possession too. They're a great puck possession team. You mean when they play hockey, they have the puck? Know what that means? They can cycle a bit? Is that what it means? It has to mean something. Anyhow.
In an interview with our affiliate, the Team 1040 in Vancouver, Canucks general manager Jim Benning said that he was looking for a quote-unquote teaching style coach and doesn't believe that coaches who are yellers and screamers can be successful in the NHL anymore. Do you agree with Benning's assessment?
I mean, what does yelling and screaming mean? I guess that's the question. That's the question, though, Drew. I mean, you know, Daryl Sutter kind of takes a hands-off approach, but you don't see what happens behind the scenes. I mean, you see Mike Babcock in 24/7 yelling a bit. Doesn't go crazy, but he yells. You saw he kicked at the cameraman out of the room. You see Dan Bylsma, who hardly has any expression. Does that work? He got fired. I don't know if there's one way to do it. I think the coaches that probably do a bit of both are probably best off. So I think he's just, again, Jim Benning is just feeding stuff to the media, and they're making more of it than it is. Like, Alain Vinas stands there with his hands crossed like the whole game. I mean, it doesn't mean he's not coaching, but maybe sometimes he needs to get a little bit more mad. I don't know. Sometimes his style works. Maybe a variety of styles. It depends on the coach. I just don't think there's one way. I mean, I agree that yelling at the players all the time doesn't work anymore. The old school style of that doesn't work anymore, but it doesn't mean never yelling works either.
Is he?
Well, I agree with that. I think that Richie mentions variety of styles. Every coach is different. Every single coach is different. I like to see passion out of a coach. Absolutely. Everybody loves to see Patrick Waugh shaking the glass like he did earlier this season with the Colorado Avalanche. But certain coaches just aren't like that. Claude Noel is like that. Doesn't mean they're not a good coach. It just means that they have their own style. But, I mean, I think to make general sweeping statements, what should be suited for... I mean, at the end of the day, guys, it's about winning. You want to win. So a coach, hopefully, is a coach that can win with the group that he has. So it doesn't matter if he's quiet, not quiet, introverted, extroverted. If he wins, that's what you want.
That's right. Coaches just show emotion. You look at the conference final. Daryl Sutter doesn't really show emotion. Great coach. Joel Quenneville shows a ton of emotion. Great coach. Elaine Vigneault, no emotion. Great coach. Michel Therrien, I don't know if he's a great coach, but very good coach. A lot of them, very emotional guy. It depends on the players. It depends on who the players are too. Is it self-policing locker room? Like, would Daryl Sutter take the same approach with the Kings as he does with the Sharks rosters? Did out with the Kings? Absolutely not. It's case by case basis.
Speaking on WGR Radio in Buffalo, Sabres general manager Tim Murray said that there is a strong possibility the Sabres will use a compliance buyout on Ville Leino. Since signing Leino to a 6-year, $27 million contract, he has scored 10 goals in 137 games.
Wow.
Give me one reason why the Sabres shouldn't buy out Ville Leino.
I can't. I can't give you one reason. That's a terrible contract. He was signed to way too much money. So was Christian Ehrhoff, by the way. And Ville Leino had a couple good years, maybe just one good year, actually, with Detroit, and they gave him tons of dough. So I think I can't find a reason.
The only reason is that they need players. That's the only reason. The problem is they don't need a player like Ville Leino on their cap for another 3 years. But honestly, they have nobody. I've heard the other rumor is that they take a player, they'll buy a first round pick, they'll take your bad contract, and they'll use their compliance buyout on that player. They have two left, I believe. So if they do that for two players and get draft picks, that's another reason why not to do it.
Soccer's World Cup started this week, which I'm sure you obviously know, as he's wearing a soccer jersey today. In honor of the so-called beautiful game, which current NHL player do you think would make the best soccer player?
Are we going for the diving angle there?
Doesn't matter. You can take it in any manner you wish.
Well, I know a lot of teams, Anaheim Ducks come to mind. They play soccer before games. I mean, soccer players are generally smaller. They've got to be, I mean, maybe like a Brendan Gallagher, a smaller guy, something like that. A guy that can get around, shifty. I'll go with Brendan Gallagher.
What kind of a question is this?
I knew you weren't going to even. You weren't even going to try.
Well, if it's the diving aspect, then Plekanec.
Sure, pick any guy. It doesn't matter.
Cheers! Congratulations!
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers!
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly, not good.
Richard Pollock.
Last night was a little emotional. It was kind of an end of an era. And I'm going to cheer, you know, Hockey Night in Canada as a whole. We don't know what it's going to become in the future here. And Ron McLean especially, they're moving him to the side and bringing in George Strombolopoulos for God knows why, what reason. And I think that, unfortunately, obviously, there's some technical difficulties last night. But there's something about Ron McLean being on the TV set and winding down a playoff season. That has a cachet there's a bit of nostalgia there, and I still think he's great, and I think it's an unfortunate change, and he gets my cheer, and that whole institution gets my cheer.
I'm going to cheer the gesture of Dustin Brown giving Robin Regier the Stanley Cup first. I thought that was extremely classy. That's Robin Regier's first Stanley Cup. He didn't play at all in the Stanley Cup Finals or the Western Conference Finals. Couldn't get back into the lineup. Dustin Brown's a great, great leader, great captain. And I thought that was just a great gesture, and they gave it to Gabrick after that because it was his first cup. So I love that type of stuff that happens after the Stanley Cup is awarded.
I'll do two cheers. Unfortunately, I have to acknowledge that Hustler won the playoff pool, so he demanded a cheer. So hey, congratulations,
Hustler.
Yeah, cheers
to Hus. Yeah,
because he beat me in Libel. Libel and I finished second.
Hustler was depressed when they were down 3-0, the Kings.
No kidding. Congrats to Hus for winning. And, of course, I'll cheer all the fathers. Father's Day tomorrow. Yep. So I'll cheer all the fathers on everybody's behalf.
Hi, Dad.
That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guest, Brendan Ross from the Scout.ca and McKean's Hockey. Big thank you to Kelly McCrimmon, Governor, General Manager, and Head Coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings. And big thank you to John McKinnon, columnist for the Edmonton Journal. In case you missed any of it will be available for download on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca and on IllegalCurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Shout out to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. For producer Tim and producer Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Best Of with Joel Marcoux.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.